This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 144, of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, we will be speaking with the organizers of Lighthouse BDSM Phone-In. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. This one is kind of a special edition, Beast.
It is indeed, Woody. Why don't you tell our listeners what we're getting into?
Well, you know, a couple weeks ago, we did a live phone hookup, and with us is Sekou Nia. How are you tonight?
I'm well, gentlemen. How are you two tonight?
Very good.
And that was truly an interesting call, wasn't it, Woody?
It was, and it went on for 2 hours.
Yes, it did, and I think we could have went for another couple, but people say that we're long-winded.
At least. And so tell us a little bit about this kinky conference call that you do, and what's it called?
The call is named the Lighthouse BDSM Community Phone-In. And basically what we noticed as we traveled around representing the Colorado master and slave title that we hold, that there's a lot of people that either don't have a community, have vanilla lives that prevent them from interacting in their community, or they're just brand new and they're afraid to venture out. So we decided we could use technology to try and bridge that gap and allow people to interact with people they may not be aware of, big names in the community, or people that serve the community like you two, with your great kinky cast having such a wealth of knowledge available to them. We just had to have you guys on.
We are truly humbled by the invitation. And it was great talking with you. And so we're going to give our audience a 2-hour dose of what that call was like right now. So let's jump into this, and we'll talk to you at the end.
Thank you, sir.
Joining us tonight, both Woody and the Beast from Kinky Cat.
Hello.
How
there.
Are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Hello. We're good here. And you're out in Colorado, is that right?
Well, we're based in Colorado, but we've been in D.C., for this past glorious weekend, communing with both our master and slave community and also getting a chance to catch up with our leather family. So we're based in Maryland right now with the Blue family, with Mr. Blue and his bourgeois, and we're just happy to have you guys here.
Well, we're glad to be here.
Now, are you guys out of Antarctica, or are you actually based in Tennessee?
No, we're in Nashville, Tennessee, Music City.
Wonderful. Do you ever co-op the Music City studio? That would be a hell of a thing to have kinky people invade the Grand Ole Opry.
That would be, but they wouldn't know what to do with us.
They would not know what to do with us.
I could see a kinky version of Hee-Haw going over like gangbusters.
There you go.
Well, I think Hee-Haw in the original was kinky anyway.
It was.
We had a lot of fetish in there, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
It'd be more in straw in your mouth when you're saying that.
Yeah, Barbie Benton, come on.
An interesting side note is the local play space. When they moved into Dolly's old practice studios.
I mean, the residual energy from that wonderful, voluptuous woman who has the chutzpah to say, "It takes a lot of money to look this cheap, darling." I'm sure you guys are just bleeding off of that for a long time.
How true, how true.
Now, one thing. I wanted to get started here. It sounds like we have some people joining in. I could hear their background levels. Luna's working on that. Gentlemen, how did you two meet one another?
We were in the local community here in Nashville. And the Beast was a legend. He's been here forever, I think, right?
Just about. And I was hosting a munch at that time, and Woody showed up.
Yeah. Actually, I was attracted to his lovely lady.
Which one?
Anne.
Anne. Okay. The main lovely lady.
That's right.
Yeah. Woody hosted some events out at the house, and we just developed a connection over time.
And it had gone on for years. And it was at the Beast's birthday party back in 2014, which was in late January, where we decided to actually put this thing together. And in literally 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, on February 1st, we came out with our first episode.
Yeah, Woody has so many toys laying around.
Audio toys.
He just threw together something, and we were on the air, didn't know what we were doing.
Oh, that first episode was rough.
Don't remind me.
Hmm.
Can we erase that from the archives?
No, we're not allowed to.
Oh, okay.
Well, I just love, one of the things I love about Kinky Cast is the relationship and the interplay between the two of you. It's really easy to see that you two knew one another before you started hosting the program, because there is a natural ebb and flow with a conversation that, in my opinion, comes from familiarity with one another.
Yes, I'd say so.
Well, we're just two young perverts.
Yeah, that's it, young.
Young.
Right, write that down.
Young perverts, and we think alike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in your youth, it seems as though you two have really amassed a wealth of experience as far as the key landscape that we live in. How do you, if you don't mind me asking, how did the two of you identify in this landscape?
I have been around the Southeast for a couple of decades now, and I've always been a top. When I tried the bottom row a couple of times, it just did not fit. So I've always been a top, and I found myself gravitating towards the sexual side and the sadistic realm, and that's kind of where I've made my home and my notorious reputation.
I came in at a very different way. I knew that I was kinky, or whatever you would call it back then in the mid-90s, and I started looking online. I was living overseas in Amsterdam at the time, and bondage.com had come on online and things like that, and I'm seeing things that were really interesting to me. And I seeked out a community in Amsterdam and around Holland, and really had quite a good time. Even though I speak a bit of Dutch, I don't speak good enough when a submissive is going into subspace and letting out strings of words that I cannot interpret. I decided I might want to try that with somebody that was a native English speaker. So I was traveling to Los Angeles a lot and met people in the community there. And so they brought me along, and then I finally moved to Silicon Valley and got very involved in the scene in San Francisco and the South Bay. Oh, how I identify, I am straight, top, and people call me a service top. I really like to make sure people have a good time.
You know, I asked that because I kind of heard that to a certain extent from the two of you before, that you both identify as tops. And it seems as though the current trend is that identifying as anything other than a dominant or a submissive or a daddy or a little girl or a master slave is out of vogue, as if you can't just be a top or a bottom and enjoy the scene. And I was wondering if you guys had noticed that same trend.
I have seen that, and I've seen that people will come on. Especially a man will come into the scene and say, well, I'm dominant. That's what I am. You know, they could be 18 and come on and make themselves a master. I'm going, don't put a label on yourself until you figure out what you really like and let it flow. Sexuality is fluid anyway. And what you like in this decade, you might not like in the next, or vice versa. And so it's a matter of really letting your will be seen to yourself.
And I just don't see the reason to limit myself by pinning down a more precise term such as dom or master. I go through, flew it through those rows depending on the relationship that I'm having with a person. I may be topping a scene, then action where I'm in the dominant row, and I live with partners in a DS way. So it's kind of a fluid change. And I think that to say I'm either master or dom just narrows me down too much.
I think we're both sensualists to a large degree.
Maybe even hedonists.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No doubt there.
He wears that badge stronger than I do. I'm more sensualist. So
I am a, I enjoy bringing pleasure to my partner. There's no doubt, because I know the reciprocity that's going to occur. But sometimes I just am in it for the pain.
Their pain.
Well, of course.
The most interesting part is that, you know, we have the equivalent of a buffet, some would even say a smorgasbord of delights before us. And the drive to exclude some of the experiences, some of the foods and the delectable, tasty items that are on that buffet, it's the equivalent of going to an all-you-can-eat place and just messing around with the salad for the entire time, because I am a dominant from day one. Well, it's like, hey, if that's not your calling, sample a little bit. You know, you might actually be a service top slave, because you don't really want the control or the power. You want to please people, and you don't have to be a dominant to please people.
Well, I have a slave that is very much like that. She pleases everybody around her, takes very good care of people, and that is her role in life. I, on the same hand, believe that service from a top point of view is very important to me. You know, when I have a party here or something, I make sure that everybody is served.
And I think that people are taking these roles, these labels, let me rephrase that, these labels on way too rapidly based on too little information. There just is a lack of self-education that's happening before somebody tries to figure out what they are. They haven't looked at the options.
I love what you just said, Beast, because I use that same terminology. I don't ask people, who are they? Because I can read your threat profile and find out who you are. I ask them, what are you? Because that's a deeper question, and it surprises me. It's actually not surprising me as much as it did initially. How many people can't say what they are, or they say, I'm not quite sure what I am? And I'm like, well, that's a great road to be on, figuring out what you are.
It's a wonderful road of discovery, but many wanted to rush to the end of that road, or some of the people coming in to this at a later stage in their life don't feel the patience to do the research, find out to be all they can be.
Well, we're in an instant gratification society. And when you look at a lot of the new younger players that are coming in, they don't look at what has gone into BDSM and the leather lifestyle in any depth to really understand how they got there. And so we find a lot of people are not respecting some of the things that are really important in protocols and like that. Some people don't like protocols at all, and that's fine. But at least understand why they're there.
Well, I'm a bit of a historian myself, and I think if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have some pretty fucked up history, so we might want to avoid that if we can.
Yeah.
It's just not in the past. It's still going on today in some places.
Speaking of history, the Beast went to Chicago to the Leather Archive and Museum, and that was quite a trip.
Have you made that trip?
I have not made that trip yet, but I did hang out at MSC this weekend with their representative and peruse some of their items. And I do frequent as often as I can the Carter Johnson Leather Library, which was at MSC. Just amazing.
The Carter Johnson collection is quite extraordinary. Some of those volumes she has in there are one of a kind, irreplaceable. So much care and love has went into gathering it.
We were able to help through the Reclaiming Our Leather History organization with acquiring the works of Moses Harman and his entire run of Lucifer the Lightbearer, him being he was the first male feminist that rallied against marriage inequality, and he went straight from abolition to marriage equality. And it's just amazing to read words written in 1895 that ring loud today. So I can totally understand what you say about, you know, the need to be somewhat of a historian, because we are making the same mistakes over and over.
It's true. And one of the problems is that a narrow mind is blocking out a lot of progress. And whenever, you know, we talk about people in the lifestyle being open-minded and being able to look at other people's kinks and not judge them and all that, not everybody's perfect here. But on the same token, I think compared to society in general, we're a lot more open and accepting.
I could agree 100%. I'm not a person that's able to love everybody. I'm just not built that way. So love is all we need. You know, I'm not that John Lennon song. Now, tolerance. I don't have to love you to tolerate you. Mm-hmm. I don't even have to like you to tolerate you. But as long as I feel as though you have the right to do exactly what you like to do, just as much as I have that right to do what I like to do, and one doesn't trump the other, hey, we can get along all day. It's just we'll just go separate ways when we start doing the things that we don't agree with. And that can be a wonderful thing. It could be a wonderful thing. So as far as when you were at the Leather Library, now Woody, you didn't get to go, but Beast went.
Right.
Were there some things that he mentioned that just had you kicking yourself and planning your travel plans to go through Chicago?
We were looking for show ideas, and we had had contact with the Carter Collection and had been working on the LLC project, and the Leather Archives Museum came up. And when we started Kinky Cast, it was just a must-do stop. And Rick and Jacob were the phenomenal host up there, and the collection was amazing. The amount of care and material that they had gathered was amazing. That was back early. That was back in episode 28 for us in 2014. So that was a early stop that we just felt compelled to do. Ann and I was looking for a vacation. Chicago seemed like a good site. So we took the L north and walked up to the synagogue.
Which the library Wonderful. Is.
The library is in the old synagogue building.
Yes, which is funny because, you know, after reading some of that stuff, you might want to give confession or something after some mm-hmm. of the steamy artifacts that we have there. I tell you what.
Well, they have whole sections of some of the classic bars in there, whole restroom recreations from some of the places where some really hot sex occurred. Back in the 60s and 70s.
The Beast walked through the museum and gave a tour. And in episode 28, you ought to listen to that. It's really good. And they cover a lot of the different artifacts and things there.
And one thing I want to do for the people that are calling, again, we as always, we do take anonymous submissions, or we will have a place for open discussion to ask questions of either Woody or the Beast. Feel free to take down these episodes that are mentioned, because these guys have been kind enough to mention certain episodes. You can find them on SoundCloud and sit and listen to this first person real account of a visceral experience of all of these interactions and visits. That's one of the things that I love best about Kinky Cast is that we are building a legacy. Mama Bai has spoken several times about our need to document our legacy, and that's part of the emphasis behind the Carter Johnson and both the Leather Archives in Chicago. These guys are doing it real time. I mean, these guys are boots down interviewing people that have either fetlebrity, which is a word I first heard from you guys, or they're out in the community, you know, actively living this way of life that we're all embracing. I just want to, before we get too far, thank you guys for doing that, because I see a good list of friends and future friends in your 135, soon to be 136 episodes.
We're always trying to bring new faces to the mix, as well as some old ones. We've talked to with Midori. That was an awesome call. And then we had the pleasure of meeting her. Woody, I spent some time with her just this spring.
Minori's an old friend, and she's just wonderful to talk to. But we did the interview with Guy Baldwin back on episode 66, and that was a real kind of emotional one for us. He took us through his life as he was thrown out of his home at the age of 18 because his mother found out he was gay, and how he took to the streets in Denver.
Yeah, our state capital.
Right.
Thank you.
Episode 66, that's a really good listen. What an incredible man Guy Baldwin is.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting Guy a couple of years back, now infamous LLC in Los Angeles. And he took me under his wing for a few minutes in the evening and gave me a quick education that I have found most useful since then.
And the wonderful thing is, you know, people say, where should I start my journey? You know, what should I read? And people go, read Slavecraft. And they read it and they're like, okay, well, this is a great book. And I'm like, well, you know, the author's still alive. Like, you know, you can go to a conference and see him. Oh, I don't have the money. I don't have it. Well, that's where your program falls squarely in. You go to episode 66 and now you have intimate knowledge, because we listened to that entire, that was our first Kinky Cast before we had any ideas of trying to have this call with you. We listened to that on the way back from the South Plains Leather Fest in April, I believe it was. And we were just like, who are these guys? And what a brilliant idea to sit down and let Guy Baldwin just tell a story.
And it is a story. It's quite a story. And we've had some others.
Oh, yeah. Sybil Holliday, for those of you who don't know the name, she's a legend in the San Francisco area. But she tells the story of going from the, as she says, the non-consensual bars of New York across the country and landing in San Francisco and taking on Cleo Dubois as a roommate. Cleo's another interview that we had. These people, they've been in it for 40 years and more. You know, everybody else is such a newbie. We're newbies at 20 plus years. When we have a person like this on the phone, it's reverence on our end that you hear.
We had to break Sybil into two episodes, didn't we?
Yes. It ran so long that we split it because she just had so much information.
Well, her story started in the 60s
mm-hmm.
in the true motorcycle gangs in New York City, and migrated to the leather community in California. So there's a lot that she had knowledge of.
You know, one of the people that is very memorable is a person that's in everybody's life right now, John Baku. If you don't know the name, he's the founder of FetLife, and we've had him on the show twice. First time he was on, he tested our servers, and they failed. He put out the word to his his friend list, which is about 100,000 people or something. The server held up for 4 hours, and then it couldn't take it anymore, and I got a call from the Boston data center that we were endangering other servers, and they pulled our plug. That was interesting.
Kinky people, we have a habit of endangering other people. We just infect them and just shake things up. I love this, that whole visual I have in mind about you crashing the Matrix with John Baku.
Well, you know, in retrospect, it was kind of fun, but I was in complete panic at the time because we were offline and I had to come up with a way to get it back online quick.
And our patch has held together for all these years.
And it has been tested, and it does good. We had Baku on for a second time in the new servers, and he didn't crash them that time.
We tested that with Baku and Ernest Green back to back.
Oh, yes, Ernest Green. Wow. And the lovely Nina.
Oh, well, yes, Nina.
Now, that was episode 69, by the way.
Yeah, and they had another episode later.
Yeah.
That is a must listen. The funny thing is, you guys speak and you speak about this thing that we do, and you speak about this life that we've chosen, and you speak reverently about leather. But I see so many people in this community today that say, hey, I'm not leather. Could you do two things for me, if you would, Woody and the Beast? If you would talk about what leather as you've come to know it. And the second part is, do you feel as though people can truly be not leather and be into BDSM?
They're two very different things. They can go hand in hand, but they don't have to. being leather is something that is all about the heart and service. And when you go to a leather event, it's very different from just a BDSM event, as we've often been to. The first one I really went to was Southeast Leather Fest. The Beast had been there the year before and kind of introduced me around. And I have now lifelong friends that I met there. I'm going to be the photographer at a lesbian couple's wedding that I met at SELF. They are very dear friends. This is the kind of thing, it touches you at a different level. BDSM is good and fun and it's good for relationships and all that. But then when you add the leather component to it, takes it to a much deeper soul rendering situation.
I will have to agree with Woody that you can definitely play at BDSM, SM, and never touch leather. You never want to know the history. You never want to know the backstory. You are strictly there for your sexual kinks and to get off. And that's great. That's great. I have some wonderful play partners that's their thing. The sex is hot. The scenes are scalding. But if you want to go deeper, and the people that want to go deeper are finding that the leather aspect and the overlap there is the way to find more than a spirituality that just isn't always there or is rarely there. I'll go on the limb and say rarely there in the BDSM scene, strictly BDSM scene.
I have to agree.
I would totally wholeheartedly agree with that last statement there, because we know so many long-term leather folk. I mean, they've been boots down in leather community, whether, you know, outwardly or clandestinely, for 20, 30 years. You know, I see the graying of the black, as I like to refer to it sometimes, because, you know, we all wear the black leather, but, you know, it's some gray folks inside that leather. And they are committed to the lifestyle, and you don't tend to see the turnover that you see just in the general kinky community. Have you noticed that same thing?
I think that there isn't a turnover, because by the time they reach the point of donning the leather in both physically and metaphysically, that they have already decided that this is a culture that they're going to be in. So they aren't no longer sampling.
Yeah, it's not a lifestyle. It's a life.
The BDSM community is full of people sampling, coming in to enhance their sex life, explore a new relationship type, and many of them spin off after a couple of years. They didn't find what they wanted, or they found a partner and they no longer need the community. But the people that are moving towards the leather, they have made the commitment to this as a life.
And a very strong community behind it that moves around with you.
We called it a culture. We use community a lot. I mean, that is the buzzword, like the community. But you said culture. And I love that concept, because what you find is it's not just community is the people that are around you and the interaction that you have. But when you say culture, you're inferring that there's a progression from a place, and it's moving towards a place, and it can go to the next level. And I love that. I think I'm going to steal that.
You're most welcome to it. We are going through some growing pains here in Nashville. We do not have a leather community in Nashville. As strange as that might be, we have a very strong, very vibrant BDSM community, but we do not have a leather community. And at this point, we are working to correct that. And there's some hurdles here. There's some hurdles. We're getting some flack from veterans wanting to tell us the true and only way to accomplish it. And then we have pushback from the younger community who, of course, want to find their own path. But we are working on it, and I think it's going to be a success.
One of the leather people that we interviewed was Paula Smith, And if you don't know that name, you might want to look it up, because back in episode 60, we found her at the Southeast Leather Fest, and what a remarkable individual. There was no female community back when she started, and so she was taken into the male community and brought along the process of gaining her leathers and training. And she has shared with hundreds of people how she has made the journey. And what an amazing person, Paula Smith.
We're blessed as the Denver community to actually have Sarah Humble call Colorado, call Denver.
Yes, you are blessed.
Her home, and you know, she's been boots down since, you know, I won't say how long she's been boots down. She always looks at me and gives me the side eye when I say how long, but.
We can't discuss her starting age for terms of service reasons.
Right.
She started young.
But they've been doing this for a long time, and I love, we were at Will this year, and they were doing the Inside the Leather Jacket interview with Judy McCarthy, and I'm just like, there have been people doing this, living this in this culture longer than I've been alive. And for you to come in and just not just realize that you, as Mama Vi says, are making your legacy. Your actions today can impact the future actions of the next generation of kinksters or leather folk or, you know, BDSM participants. You're really being short-sighted. You're not grasping the reality of what's going on, because they didn't know what they were doing. They were looking for hot sex and for the freedom to do what they want to do, how they wanted to do it. And now, look, if it wasn't for them, there would be no us.
We do have some old-timers in the BDSM community that I think dare some mention, like Nancy Ava Miller. Incredible woman. She was a Johnny Appleseed of kink through the Midwest in the 90s. She started groups like Black Rose, which was Pep DC, groups in Atlanta, groups in Houston, groups in St. Louis, Nashville. And the woman is still alive and kicking and just as feisty as she was.
Episode 40, Nancy Ava Miller. Incredible interview.
And she wrote the book, literally.
Yeah.
And I hate to say, but I'm mentioned in the book by real name, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. And you're that old.
And I'm that old. There are BDSMers that have been very diligent in building community. But I will go back and say that the leather people are more consistent and more intentional on what they do, I think.
And that's coming on the heels of MSC again. I just have to thank once again Master Tano for you know, having the vision of creating that opportunity for those who choose to live a life of leadership and service to come together and fellowship. And I use the word fellowship specifically because it is like a church spiritual event for me personally, when I get to feel the energy of other masters and other slaves, regardless of gender, sexual orientation, or identification. We get to come together and share one another's energy and be vulnerable and be supportive and be strong and proud. And just that aspect of leather, in addition to the accountability, because those same people that hug you and tell you you're doing a good job will put their foot squarely in your ass when you're doing a bad job.
People will call you on it. Yes, absolutely. And they should.
And that accountability is needed.
I've been pulled up short a couple times.
Now, you guys travel. So before I pitch for you possibly coming out to Colorado, of course, I have to represent my state. You went to a certain house party. You actually went to a house party in Kentucky.
The White House. Jimmy, the master lord and owner of the White House, is an old friend. He and I shared a bed with my second wife a couple of times. And Jimmy's been a kinkster for a long time. He does have a leather vest, so he does dabble a little bit. He's not got serious. But Jimmy's a hedonist. And Anne and I took a novice female to a house party. And now remember, Jimmy's house is way out in the backwoods of Kentucky.
In the cornfields, literally.
In the cornfields. It's a quarter mile drive down the cornfield road to get to Jimmy's house, which is carved out in the middle of the field. And you've already spent 45 minutes, an hour on back roads to get to this driveway. So you don't get there by accident. Jimmy is just the most incredibly gracious host of events. And we interviewed a sprinkling of the people there that night and got some very interesting tape. We were blessed to enjoy the party. Not the first party we've been to, nor the last, but Jimmy definitely knows how to throw one. And that's episode number 30. You're carrying us back down memory lane here.
I try, sir. Like I said, I did my homework, and it was such a fulfilling endeavor because it was such great tales and experiences. And aren't we all in this for the experience?
We are. That's the adventure. That's what we're here for, the adventure. But at that party, we met such an interesting cross. We ran into a couple from New England just relocating to the area. So you know, we're such a highly mobile group now.
And you said that there were issues in Nashville, Tennessee, and I say Nashville, Tennessee, like there's any other Nashville. No, but Nashville, Tennessee. So remember, all you Kingsters and Leathers folk that are on the line, you know we travel better than any sports team supporter. So they're saying that they're having a little bit of a need for us to come down there. They may need to do some kind of Nashville invasion to help out with the Leather community in Nashville.
We have a meeting this, our second or third meeting this weekend, and we're hoping to get some more firmness and some direction. We're definitely going to be a service group serving the needs of the community, and we're looking to build some traditions and some fellowship among the people that are more looking for something deeper beyond just the tickle of the flogger. So we love to have you all from everywhere.
That's something that we talk about when we have our discussions. We don't tend to try and name what we do as classes and teaching, because who are we to teach anybody? But one of the things we talk about in our discussions is moving past the tactile aspects of what it is that we do. The second that we get past, oh my gosh, I get to see titties and asses and penises and woo, and I can do stuff to people. What is there after that? What is it to sustain us? Or are we just going to overdose on the tactile? And that's where I feel as though the need to be interconnected and have the support of these communities, like a Leather community or like a, just like a Leather community. That's my segue into Leather. It's so important because it gives you a deeper understanding of what it is we do. And it actually, in my humble opinion, can make you better at doing it.
That's definitely true for those that want to go further, but I will say that's the minority of any kink community in the world, is those that want to invest that deeply and go on. For many, it just stops at the spank, and that's okay. And I definitely enjoy watching the energy of those people because they have such bountiful enthusiasm when they come in, and they are a joy to watch.
We do have an episode called Curb Your Enthusiasm also.
Yeah, we do.
It's when frenzy goes a little bit wrong.
Well, I think, was that when Kate, one of my partners is Kate Kinsey. She's a very capable author that wrote a book about the happy submissive that's out there on Amazon. And she's got some interesting insights into this. She's a bit jaded after her 20 years in the community, but she's still answering questions and helping newbies find their footing.
Now, I had a question inbox that when they asked me, I would normally ask some of these questions that are inbox, but I'm going to ask this question to you because I would like to have two of your perspective on it. Someone asked, is joining a Leather family like entering into a dynamic? What would you two say about that?
Anytime you talk about family, you can't take the word dynamic out of the out of the discussion. A dynamic is the how you describe the interaction of two people, who's on top when, who's on bottom, who makes decisions, who carries the loads when, who carries the loads the other time. And when you enter a family, that's part of it, is the family dynamic.
Then it gets more complicated by the third person, the fourth person, the fifth person.
Well, when you talk about a leather family, it's a extended.
Mm-hmm.
It does get complicated because each person brings something positive to the relationship, and often everybody brings some negative to the relationship, and that shifts the relationship around. And I don't think you can take the word dynamic out of any discussion.
I know that we all often preach about leather like it's the Holy Grail and it makes everything easy. But like most things, when you start adding persons to your life and adding their issues to your issues and their highs and lows to yours, it's not exactly easier. It actually becomes a greater challenge. Now, mind you, it might be more fulfilling to endure that challenge or to receive that challenge, but it's not easier.
Oh, there's a lot of work there. Absolutely.
But everything we're exposed to brings a new way of looking at the world, and those new ways are what helps us solve future problems. We have to continue to add to our toolbox as in a relationship, because nothing stays the same. If it does, would we be happy there?
Right. If everything was easy and it was complacent and constant, I don't think many of us that identify as kinksters or in leather or just into BDSM, I don't think we'd want to do it anymore. We have to go find something else to do.
And that's the reason that some of us are a little cautious about this mainstreaming that's going on today. Are we going to lose our taboo nature?
That's the thing. It's like, I always throw this out there. I'm like, hey, whenever they say, oh, I don't know if I should do this, I don't know if I should do that, I'm like, hey, remember, leather is a rebel culture. We're rebels. So if we're not sure about whether we should do it, nobody's done it before, that sounds like the thing we're supposed to be doing. When it becomes the thing that everybody's doing, it's like, I don't know what to do next.
When we had Guy Baldwin on, he brought up a couple things. We were talking about the gay men's community and why we don't often see them mixing with the het BDSM community. And he says what they do is, you know, real shiny and bright to them. But when you bring it out and have other people cast an eye on it, say, well, that's pretty rough. You know, they play pretty hard, you know. And so the judgment kind of dilutes the strength of what they have. And now we're starting to see that coming at our level from BDSM to the vanillas that are watching the movie 50 Shades of Grey, reading the book. And now all of a sudden the exclusivity of our BDSM club is diluted by the mass populace.
It's funny you say that about the head conversation, because I just on Sunday night had the pleasure of meeting Master Black Zeus, who has been active in the community for a long time. And, you know, he's a person of color who's been out there since before there were people of color out there, especially not het people of color. And he said exactly the same thing. He, you know, to paraphrase, he said, a lot of het people, especially people of color that are heterosexual, they're out here and they're like, this is brand new to us. And this is wild. And this is crazy. It's like, y'all are the last ones to arrive at the picnic. You know, this is still new to you. That doesn't make it new to everyone else. And being a person of color that identifies as leather, that is in a heterosexual relationship and dynamic, I'm like the 1% of the 1% and the last guy at the picnic. But I recognize actively that there's people that have been sitting here for a long time waiting on my arrival. And if they hadn't got here so early, I probably wouldn't have had a place to sit down at all. And that's something that we need to remember, that there's always somebody that came before you. And just because it's easy for you now doesn't mean that it wasn't hard for them, that it could become easy for you now.
The book 50 Shades of Grey would have fallen flat if there hadn't been this subculture already in existence to lend some credibility and believability to that story. It would have been a unbelievable fantasy.
Mama Vi once, she cautioned me, she helped me along in my journey, and she was telling me how that, because, you know, like most people, I was just really trying to make this distinction between, you know, what I do and the 50 Shades of Grey-ers and, you know, these new entrants, and I'm the official blah, blah, blah. And she was letting me know that we're doing ourselves a disservice because regardless of what you came into the community on the heels of, you came into the community on the heels of something. There are those that came in off of Story of O, The Secretary, 50 Shades of Grey, The Pet, you know, The Leatherman's Handbook, whatever it was, you still had something that galvanized your engine.
Quills.
Quills, the movie about the Marquis de Sade. I remember that.
That's one of my favorites.
I enjoyed The Libertine with Johnny Depp, too.
Or 9 1/2 Weeks. Or, Joanna, which I probably just dated myself just now saying Joanna, but I'll take that back.
Well, you know, we do have an episode called Kinky Cinema.
Yes. What's that episode? And mind you, when you guys throw out these episode numbers, my slave is posting them in the group. So just in case people don't know where to find them, in the host group on Facebook for this call, we have the direct links to the Kinky Cast episodes that are being mentioned.
Kinky Cinema is episode 50. And by the way, if you're looking for something, go to kinkycast.com, the homepage, and there's a search engine right on the front page. And I just went in and I typed cinema, and it popped up with the answer to that question, since I can't remember all the episode numbers myself at this point.
Woody's an incredible guru.
A topic that I had jotted down. You're not the police, because we tend to have a lynch mob / tribunal / secret council of elders that decide who is right and who is wrong and what we should do about it, aka the posters on FetLife.
You know, a lot of times the community puts on the big police hat and somebody screws up and they come down on them like a ton of bricks. Well, you know, that's a bit of a problem because, first off, we're not the police. We don't have the advantage of any laws behind us to enforce. And maybe we're not qualified. Ask yourself that. We're not psychologists. We're not law enforcement. We're not attorneys. There are professionals that need to step in at certain times. And I've seen communities, police people, shun them, expose them. And a lot of bad has come from it.
The funny thing is, we're not impartial either. We have our preconceived notions.
Oh, absolutely.
The ability to hear information without placing that opinion on it is not there. And there are professionals that's their job. They take, look, I don't care if you killed your mama. I'm here to defend this action right here. So we're going to take ardent defense for you. Or I'm here, I don't care if we play golf together. I'm here to prosecute you because you did something wrong. Okay, you guys do that, but our opinion, you know, that whole thing about the asshole and how they smell, everybody's got their opinion. You get enough of those together, it forms a lynch mob.
And that is the exact problem. If you look at the way a detective puts together a crime scene, they're interviewing a lot of people, and they know that the average person cannot remember the situation. And so they go and get enough people that can tell the story, and they actually try to build and recreate the scene. As community members, we get rather emotional about it, and we will jump to conclusions. I know that I did when I was in that situation, and I feel really bad about it. I actually passed judgment against somebody because a young lady got hurt in the scene, and she came to me telling me how it all came down and how bad it was, and I called him, you know, gathering of the elders, and it did not go well because she did not tell me the whole story, and I wasn't smart enough to go dig around for all the facts. There were two sides to that story that needed to be told.
And there, most of the time, there's three sides.
Yeah.
Yeah, the truth is somewhere in there on the other side of the story.
And we're just not qualified to find it.
or even concern. A lot of times we're not even concerned with finding it. It's like, this speaks to an idea that I hold dear. I'm going to jump in and throw my 2 cents there, and not realizing that this is 2, 3, 4, 12, maybe 16, if we count the people that have yet to come and endure this situation. These are their lives. Some people, it's just a FET post, but this FET post or this blurb that you want to add to a FET post is affecting someone's life, mm-hmm. and we forget that sometimes.
Well, the whole internet has had its positives, but one of the negatives is the ability to maintain anonymity when that isn't always a deserved position that you have, that we sometimes divorce ourselves from the statements we make because, oh, they're just words on the screen.
Yeah, we have the cyber bravado and cyber wisdom of Zeus and, you know, all of the great gods and goddesses of Olympus, just because we can hit enter and we don't have to stand behind that statement because, you know, sir, fuck you, long time, can't be found to be held accountable for that blasphemous statement that just made someone cry, as opposed to, hey, I'm in the community with Woody and the Beast and, you know, I'm going to go talk to them Tuesday night down at the Munch about the thing that they said to me on Saturday at the play party. That's a different kind of environment, and that's not the environment, sadly, that we always find ourselves in.
And try to stay away from cyber lynch mobs or real lynch mobs, for that matter.
But it would be a really hot scene taken right to the edge.
You're a sick man, Beast.
I am. I am a demented individual.
There are stories of Dark Odyssey.
Yes.
And DC having actually a lynching scene that happened, and that really was the mind fuck of all mind fucks for everybody that didn't know that was a scene. So yeah, it could, from what I heard, it could be either hot or horrific, but I guess that's what kind of makes a good scene, isn't it?
There was a lot of things that went on at Dark Odyssey this year, and we're putting together a show about one of them. So I'll just hold that off as a tease.
Yeah, that's a double tease. And I know a couple members of my extended family and friends were our ardent Dark Odyssey participants and attendees. And yeah, I hope they'll join for that podcast as well. Because yeah, it goes down when nobody's looking.
Yeah.
There's nobody to look at Dark Odyssey. It's everybody there kinky.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I did check that episode number for Kinky Cinema. It is 51.
Episode 51 for
Kinky
Cinema.
My site needs a little updating.
Well, Woody, you're surrounded by computer screens.
Yes, I am.
Don't miss any of the action. Move ahead to 144B to hear the rest of the call.